Well, thousands of migrants remain trapped at the border between Belarus and Poland. Now, with the snow falling and many living without shelter, they are pawns in a standoff between the leader of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, and the European Union. And while many migrants remain, many have decided to return home. In a moment, special correspondent Simona Fultin will report from northern Iraq on some who returned there. But first, Ali Rogan starts with the situation in Belarus.
On the Belarus side of the border with Poland, migrants who once hid in the woods are now stacked in government warehouses. They clamor for electrical outlets. They use outdoor hoses to bathe in the freezing cold. It beats sleeping in the forest, but not by much. Despite the shelter, the migrants are still left out in the cold, caught in a power play by Europe's last dictator, Alexander Lukashenko.
Lukashenko has orchestrated the migrant crisis on the border and its retribution for EU sanctions.
Melinda Herring is the deputy director of the Eurasia Center at the Atlantic Council, a nonpartisan think tank. She said that as Lukashenko became more authoritarian and more isolated in the West, he sought ways to appear legitimate.
He is saying, I control the migrants, I'm in charge of this situation here, and you're going to have to negotiate with me.
His regime used social media campaigns, offering visas, direct flights, and hotel reservations to people in Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan. They lured migrants to Belarus with the promise of getting to the European Union. But when they arrived, authorities abandoned them at European borders. In response, the European Union threatened new sanctions. In the past week, camps on the Belarus side of the border have disappeared.
It reached such a fevered pitch that Lukashenko had to back down.
Belarus sent some migrants to the warehouses and many others back towards Europe. These siblings from Syria said Belarus officials drove them to the Polish border.
They forced us every day to cross the Polish border. They told us, you either die in Belarus or you keep pushing towards Poland.
An aid group found the siblings, and Polish border guards reviewed their documents. But most migrants on the Polish border are treated harshly, leading to scenes like this, pushed out by Belarus state TV, of clashes between guards and civilians. Aid workers say Poland set up an exclusion zone from which they are forbidden. Stefan Lehmeyer is the deputy director of Europe programs for the International Rescue Committee, a humanitarian group.
Anybody who is in there and needs help can only get that help from local residents if those local residents respond or happen to find them. We cannot go in and help them, and even ambulances are turned away.
He said Poland won't process asylum claims.
These asylum seekers know that they will have a hard time having their asylum claim assessed by Poland. They know that most likely if they get caught here in this country, they will be pushed back into Belarus, which would be disastrous for them.
Poland says it is fighting a Russian-backed scheme to destabilize Europe.
Unfortunately, this is only the beginning of a longer crisis that Lukashenko's regime has caused, probably directed by the Kremlin. It is an attempt to breach the eastern border of NATO and the European Union.
But the scenes on the border play straight into Lukashenko's hands.
We need to show the Poles that we are not barbarians. We don't want any escalation, but we will protect those hapless folks as much as we can.
So this is a great opportunity for Lukashenko. Lukashenko can get in their face and say, you guys are hypocrites. You say you believe in international law. Well, how on earth are you pushing people back to Belarus?
Sick of being pawns in a long game, cold, tired, and abused, many migrants are now heading home.
I'm Simona Fultin in northern Iraq. This is the final stop of a two-month-long odyssey to reach Europe. A half-finished house in a dusty, desolate suburb of Erbil, the capital of Iraqi Kurdistan. This Kurdish family of eight sold all their belongings and borrowed $20,000 to pay for the journey to Belarus in hopes of reaching Germany. Instead, they became pawns in the geopolitical tug of war between Belarus and the European Union. Jihan Harbi tells me their story.
We reached Lithuania. They beat us and sent us to Belarus. Then Belarus sent us back to Lithuania. It's like they were playing football with us.
For weeks they camped out in the forest, braving freezing temperatures. Jihan's husband, Diab, pictured here, was badly beaten by border police on both sides. The sixth time Lithuanians forcibly returned them to Belarus, the family decided to return home, traumatized, humiliated, with the heavy burden of repaying their debt.
I have nothing left here. I will work as a daily laborer to return the money, but I don't know if I'll manage.
The family is among hundreds of Iraqi Kurds who've returned over the past week, many on government repatriation flights. To claim asylum in Germany, Jihan and Diab had planned to cite threats and the kidnapping and killing of a relative during Iraq's sectarian conflict in 2007, when they lived in the Sunni Arab majority city of Mosul. But they've lived in Kurdistan for 14 years now. What's really driving them away is poverty and what they call an unjust government.
They don't do a good job for the poor people. They just work for themselves.
He's referring to the Kurdistan Regional Government, or KRG, which runs this part of Iraq. Kurdistan is often described as a beacon of stability. The region has better infrastructure and services than other parts of Iraq and has offered refuge to persecuted minorities and activists fleeing violence elsewhere in the country. But beneath this veneer of stability, many Kurds don't see a future amid a prolonged economic crisis and rising authoritarianism. Kurdish officials, however, blame their woes on long-lasting disputes over oil revenue with the federal government in Baghdad.
KRG has 1 million above public sector members and staff, civil servants, that unfortunately were cut off of sort of full budget and payments from Baghdad for 7 years.
In the nearby town of Rania, the city center teems with unemployed men. Those we spoke to blamed not Baghdad, but nepotism and corruption inside Kurdistan's own government, long dominated by two families and their respective political parties. These two friends are both recent university graduates. One is a licensed lawyer, the other a microbiologist who graduated top of his class. Neither has been able to find work.
If you have political support, you can go far in many fields. But if you don't have political support, nobody will hire you.
And so the only option they see is to head for Europe, no matter how.
The window of opportunity to reach the EU through Belarus may be closing, but already travel agencies here in Iraqi Kurdistan are offering package deals for other European countries. A ticket and visa to Croatia, for example, sells for $7,000. It's a price many here are willing to pay.
We meet a man who facilitates trips to Europe through a group on the messaging app Telegram. He claims that he isn't a smuggler, but wanted to remain anonymous for fear of authorities. He explains how the process works.
People will give the money to an intermediary in Erbil. When they reach their final destination in Germany, they will confirm that they are at a certain hotel in Germany, and the intermediary will release the payment to the smuggler.
The Kurdish government has vowed to crack down on these networks, but without addressing the structural issues fueling the latest exodus of Iraqis, the crisis at Europe's borders is likely to endure. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Simona Foltin in Iraqi Kurdistan.